How did Syria spiral down to the failed nation it now is? Well, you'd be forgiven for forgetting. It's been dizzying. But a new terrific documentary from Sebastian Younger lays it all out. We meet one of the young men who, during the Arab Spring, wrote anti-government graffiti on a school wall and was tortured by President Assad's men for doing so. We see the peaceful protests in 2011 that followed. And when Assad begins firing on those protesters, his own people, we meet mothers who went to protest to keep an eye on their kids and then watch them die.
If God gave me 1,000 years to live, I will never forget that sound.
And that's just the beginning. The protests turn into civil war. Anti-Assad militias multiply. The U.S. disappoints them. Turkey, the Kurds, Russia, ISIS all get in the ring. The fighting, Assad's barrel bombs, airstrikes, produce the largest refugee crisis since World War II. Longtime war correspondent Sebastian Younger's new film is Hell on Earth, The Fall of Syria and the Rise of ISIS. It airs Sunday on the National Geographic Channel. And Sebastian, I feel like we're seeing footage we have never seen before. We are placed right in the story. Where'd you get it?
So what we did basically was establish connections with people, Syrians, who were able to shoot for us. We even tried to get someone to shoot for us with ISIS. Ultimately, that didn't work. But ISIS put so much footage online that they shoot themselves that we were actually able to take some of that.
Now, it's chilling, and you're right there. Let's start at the beginning, March of 2011. As we said, the Assad regime cracking down after some kids scrawl some graffiti. You speak to one of the kids. This was during the Arab Spring. Other authoritarian leaders were falling. Here's former NPR correspondent Sarah Chase, now of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, in your film, talking about the turmoil in other Arab countries during the Arab Spring.
Bashar al-Assad looks at that and says, I'll be damned. So he was willing to respond to peaceful demonstrations with maximal use of force.
And there again, we see Assad's men shooting on civilians. What would you say about, first of all, Bashar al-Assad having put this together?
Well, where to begin? I mean, he's a brutal dictator who mercilessly ordered his security forces to open fire with automatic weapons on his own citizens simply for asking for and eventually demanding democratic reforms and human dignity and human rights. Eventually, he escalated to dropping bombs on people, on civilian neighborhoods, and finally, he wound up using nerve gas, chemical weapons against civilians. He's an absolute monster.
Well, people are rounded up and sent to prisons and radicalized there if they didn't starve to death in those prisons. Militias are forming and multiplying, and people are trying to flee. We meet two brothers who we see throughout the movie, Radwan and Marwan. They fled their home in Aleppo with their families, children, hiding out, constant barrel bombing. Let's listen.
They were in Aleppo. They fled. They wound up in Manbij, which was under the control of ISIS. We got a camera into that family, and they volunteered to self-document their lives under ISIS and then their conversation, their decision to try to flee ISIS, hidden in the back of a truck. Mm. They did it. They made it out alive. They got to Turkey and then eventually onto a rubber raft trying to get to Greece.
Which we should say, they don't make it. They're turned back.
To turn back, yeah. And one of the things that we wanted to talk about in this film was this conundrum of war refugees for the West, for the modern world. Like, what do you do with people who are sensibly fleeing an incredibly dangerous situation with their children? Does the world owe people like that a refuge? I don't say this overtly, but it's pretty clear if you watch the film, it's the only compassionate conclusion you can really come to.
Well, one of the things that you take away from the film, because the refugee situation is at the very end. We're watching year after year, 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015, as this grows and festers, and it's like a petri dish that produces incredible ugliness, including ISIS. You know, much of this we know, but I don't know how many people know. As you say in the film, you feel that Assad made an agreement with ISIS. I mean, the narrative has always been that ISIS was also fighting the Assad regime and then also fighting the local militias. You say, you know, Assad pretty much made an agreement with ISIS.
Assad understood that if the rebels that he was fighting were reasonable people who just wanted democratic reforms, that the West would be inclined to support them, even to get arms to them. But if he could make those people look like Islamic radicals, of course, the West wouldn't touch them. So he released from his own prisons the most radical Islamists so that they could form radical groups in the countryside that he could then fight. That effectively prevented the West from funneling support into them. Eventually, ISIS grew out of that. The last thing he wants is for ISIS to be defeated because, of course, ISIS is such a monstrous organization. It's what's keeping the West from actually intervening and involving itself in an otherwise legitimate demand for equality and dignity by the Syrian people.
Talk more about the U.S. and the role. We see President Obama make his comment about the red line in the sand. We see all of the militias on the footage that you've curated waiting for the response from the Obama administration after Assad indeed uses chemical weapons on his own people. It doesn't come. Instead, we see the footage of the president walking out in that, you know, very famous now moment where he walks to the podium and says, in fact, I will not be responding to what's happening. Is this the U.S.'s fault?
No, we didn't cause the Syrian civil war. It was part of the Arab Spring. The Syrian government lost control of the situation on the ground, and 400,000 people have been killed. With the nerve gas, we finished this film before Donald Trump rocketed the airbase that actually delivered nerve gas to a civilian neighborhood a month or so ago. Obama declined to do that. And on the one hand, it's outrageous. I mean, on the one hand, using nerve gas against civilians absolutely should trigger an international response. On the other hand, you can kind of see where Obama's coming from. He's been handed two wars by the former president. He's sort of extricating himself from Iraq. These wars were very, very unpopular. And now he's asked to wade into another Middle Eastern war. You can kind of understand his reluctance.
Talk about some of the other things that you learned. When you lay it out like this, you really get to see so many connective tissues. So, for instance, you see the militias, these brave Syrian militias, kicking ISIS out of Syria. But ISIS goes to Iraq, where it raids all the army outposts, steals the weapons, and goes back into Syria. Well, you know, what are some of the other moments that became clear to you when you lay it out?
Eventually, if you let these situations go on for too long, Somalia, Nigeria, Afghanistan, Syria, you get radicalism. ISIS rose up because that kind of anarchy and chaos is a very rich ground for radical thinking. But they came out of northern Iraq. So we have to understand that when the U.S. went into Iraq, they basically supported a Shia government that had the backing of Iran and sidelined the Sunnis in Iraq. Eventually, al-Qaeda and then ISIS came in and promised to protect the Sunni population from the Shia government in Baghdad. And that was the rise of really violent radicalism in that part of the world. And it eventually became known as ISIS.
Again, you've curated so much video, including ISIS propaganda, the beautiful, really Hollywood-inspired, as you say, videos that they make. The Nasheeds, we're going to listen to a little, but what is that?
The Nasheeds are religious songs that basically call people to jihad, to violence, to war. They're songs that advocate attacks on the West and the joining of ISIS in Syria.
They sound like pop tunes, and we understand that ISIS is against music.
ISIS is against music unless it furthers the aims of a radical religious ideology and bolsters their regime. I mean, of course, almost any government in the world is guilty of condoning things that help them, even though they're against them.
Well, interestingly, you have scholars throughout the film, and one reminds us that, you know, there was music used during the French Revolution. And when you listen closely to the lyrics now, we'll soak the fields with blood. I mean, we have had songs like this historically.
Yes, one of the things I wanted to do was point out that the public use of violence by ISIS, the public cutting off of heads and the public torture of people is an attempt to intimidate people in Syria and in the world. It's no different from the public lynchings of black men in the South well into the 20th century. Those murders could have been committed in private, in secret. They weren't. They were done in public in the town square for exactly the same reason that ISIS was conducting violence in the town square.
Mm. Sebastian Younger, the film is Hell on Earth, The Fall of Syria and the Rise of ISIS. It'll be on the National Geographic Channel on Sunday. And Sebastian, I know that tomorrow you are going to be showing this to Congress.
Yes, we're taking our film to Washington, D.C., and if Congress comes, it's up to them, but we're making it available to them, and I'm very much hoping that they see it. There's an enormous question in my mind about war refugees and what this country and other countries owe the kinds of people who are depicted in this film, really good people, unfortunate people who have been driven out of their country by war.
Sebastian, thanks.
Thank you.